Well, with that introduction, it's always great to talk baseball, especially July 4th. God, Bruce and I have been doing this for years. Bruce Jacobs of the Chronicle joins us July 4th holiday. No baseball other than spring training 2.0, but there's still a lot to talk about. Bruce, how are you?
Doing well, Marty. Yeah, it's great to see photos of players at ballparks. Of course, it's weird, and there's masks, and don't touch that ball, and stuff like that, but they're there, and they're trying, so that's what we were hoping to see.
Yeah, you wrote an interesting article this week about the different things that will happen here for the media, and being part of it, and you've been part of it for so many years. Things are different now, and they may never go back to the way they were. Why don't you tell us about that article? Because you got a lot of good compliments about that article this week in the Chronicle.
Thanks. I mean, it's really it's gotten more difficult for baseball writers over the years. Topped off by today, where everything is Zoom and virtual contact. But sometimes you're glad to be as old as you are because you had circumstances that no longer exist. For me, coming into the beat writing gig in the 1980s with the Chronicle covering the A's and the Giants, in those days, we were basically part of the team as far as traveling goes. They took care of our luggage. We were on the team buses, on the team flights. We're staying in their hotels. It was a cushy lifestyle for sure. But as long as you walked that straight line and wrote fairly and didn't get to the point where you were like bought by the team, which I don't recall ever happening because we had such great standard bearers like Nick Peters and Ron Bergman and Glenn Schwartz in the business and showed me the ropes. And I got an early taste of what it's like to cover a bad team and be honest about it with Billy Martin. I got two sides, the best of all worlds when they went through the playoffs in 81 and then 82, everything unraveled and Billy was just a mess. But to compare that, being able to fly with a team, go on the team buses and have them take care of your luggage and your hotel keys are there when you get in, compared to today where writers are on charter flights, they might go through Charlotte to get to New York or some god-awful thing. Maybe the flight's canceled. They have to book their own hotels. Maybe they don't get the one they want. They wanted to be in town, but now they're out by the airport, and all these things that come up. And I feel bad. There's a trade-off because they get all these miles on the airlines and hotel points, and, hey, you get a free week on Maui, But I always thought I wouldn't trade that for 8 months of comfort. And not to mention the great connections we had with the players. Just getting ready to get on a flight or on the flight, go back and where the players are sitting and maybe ask somebody if he's got a minute or, head up front and talk to the manager. Just so many things. And I'm just lucky that I had that. And so now we go from, the inconvenience that writers have traveling to, the personal connection is completely gone now. If you're covering a game, you're going to be in a designated spot at the Giants and A's parks. The A's area is actually outdoors. I think the Giants have the option of being indoors or outdoors, but you're not on the field, you're not in the clubhouse, you're not connecting with anyone face-to-face. You're just kind of winging it, really, and your only contact is when they set up a virtual interview and everybody else is on it and the team controls it, and it's going to be awfully difficult for people to, make their mark with interesting features and stuff like that. You can still text somebody and call them on the phone, but there's nothing like, as you know, Marty, as well as anybody in the world, there's nothing like sitting down face-to-face with a person, looking them in the eye, and knowing that there's a connection there and that things are going good, and then some trust is built.
Bruce, with us, we may never go backwards. You can't go in the clubhouse. You can't go in after the game, obviously. And of course,
that was my point.
The reasons now, but even when we go forward in this thing, they may never open it up again because the players really don't want the press around anyway.
Exactly right, and that was really the point in my article, is that we may never go back. I mean, the players are in there. That's just the beginning, but as we get through this, assuming we do get through it, they're in there with complete privacy. And if I'm the players, I'm absolutely loving it. And I'll tell you also, I've never liked going into the clubhouse. This goes back to the 70s when I was working in Santa Monica, was covering some Dodger games. Not once in my life. Maybe when they win the whole thing and there's champagne and everything. But just the general act of going in there, I always feel like, what am I doing in here? You know, really. And half the time we're in there just talking to each other. Nobody's available. They don't want to come out. They might never come out. You're in there for 45 minutes. I'm talking to Marty and Chris Haft.
It's true. You know, Leonard Coppett said this to me years ago. Leonard, of course, wrote for, the New York Times and the newspapers, the Journal American Web, but back in New York and everything else. He said he never went in to after the game unless there was something that he didn't understand that he needed
exactly.
to
clarify. That's where I've been. Yeah, Peter, I'm sorry, but as a columnist and no longer right on the beat, that's exactly how I've treated it. I don't go in there unless I have something specific in mind. Otherwise, I'm just hanging out.
And now it's going to be interesting to read a game story from Henry or John or Susan, whoever, the Chronicle, and Alex, the rest of the crowd, Kerry, because it will be their story of the game without anyone explaining it to them.
That's the thing. I mean, I never minded having to write a game without quotes, and I never felt like, well, I'll go down to the locker room and they'll write my story for me. There's a real art to writing a game, the proper way with a little art to it and literacy. But it's different now. I mean, because you won't necessarily have things explained to you. The television coverage, who knows how that's going to be? Are you going to get the right replay? And it glitches here and there, and you're going to be kind of walking a tightrope here and a little blindfolded. So it's going to be different. And there'll be times when people write something, interpreting it the best that they can, and it turns out that's not what happened. So that's never good.
Yeah, it's almost, which I love, back to the Bob Stevens. The only guy who could have caught the ball was the guy who hit it.
Hot enough to melt the paint off a battleship.
Really? Because you don't have anyone writing the story for you, and you have to write a story. A story. S-T-O-R-Y, a story of the game.
I always enjoyed that. You don't always crack all a good one out there, but I always enjoyed that part. And the interview process was always very secondary for me.
Mm. All right, beautiful. Very good column, though. You did get a lot of nice comments about it. This is the July 4th weekend, and Bruce, for years I always acknowledge Larry Doby's debut, July the 5th. To integrate the American League, only 22 years old, without the skills that Jackie had at the time, and boy, he was rejected. And then just a couple of days later, in 1948, and he made a difference in the Cleveland Indians' run to the pennant and beating the Red Sox in a playoff game, 42-year-old Satchel Paige is signed and is in a game finally a major league game for the Cleveland Indians. So both of those coming up this week.
Yeah, Satchel Paige, he breaks in at 42 with the 48 Indians. He's right in the middle of a pennant race. They're a great team. They're going to the World Series. He goes 6-1, 2.48 ERA. He gets a win over the Yankees. He retires Yogi and Rizzuto and those guys. He throws a couple of shutouts against the White Sox. He only pitched once in that World Series against Boston. It was Game 5, and talk about a classic with Spahn against Bob Feller in that game. Satchel Paige came on in the seventh inning to get a couple guys out, and then Al Rosen pinch hit for him. Just amazing. I mean, this is a guy that actually, you talk about somebody pitching at the age of 40. He pitched for 40 years. He pitched from 1926 to 1946. I mean, for heaven's sake. As far as Larry Doby, I think, you had to be right when you made those calls in those days. The segregationist climate was really hostile and fierce, and you had to be right with Jackie Robinson and Larry Doby, and they were. Branch Rickey obviously was quite right with Jackie Robinson, and Bill Veeck, where he brought on Larry Doby, it was a different kind of personality. Larry Doby had some tough things happen in his upbringing. He was very, very quiet. And, he was also shunned by his teammates, because that's just the way it was. Jackie Robinson went through that. And Dobie had a very terrible first half season. Like you say, he was brought up in July and didn't do that well. But, you know, a real test of character. He comes back in 48. All of a sudden, that's a huge year for the Indians, for the town, and for him. And he has a really good year. And he winds up being just a tremendous player. I mean, he led the American League in home runs and 7 straight All-Star teams, Hall of Fame, number retired. And Bill Veeck and Branch Rickey nailed it, both the two of them.
Well, it's great. I'm just so glad. And not only did he pitch from 1920, he pitched until the 50s with the Marlins in the International League. I saw him pitch in Miami Stadium in 1957 or 58. So
yeah.
Quite a story.
How about Satchel Paige? His last big league season was 1953. So now it's 1965.
Right.
I don't know. He might be 100 now. Who knows how old he is? And Charlie Finley, who was always up for a gimmick, brings him in Kansas City, last day of the 65 season. He's going to start Satchel Paige against the Red Sox. He goes 3 innings with 1 hit, the 1 hit by Yaz. Mm-hmm. And that's his last, just this guy was a true pitching genius. And you only wish you could have seen him. Is he had a leg kick that maybe even higher than, more dramatic than Marshall, if you can imagine such a thing. But, a true genius on the mound. And what a story. I mean, he comes from, Mobile, and, he talked about it was a good day if he was wearing shoes.
He was so effective in 48 that Will Harridge, who was the president of the American League, ended up banning the hesitation pitch. They wouldn't let him throw it anymore because it was so effective that they wouldn't let him do it.
Yeah, kind of a Louis Tien kind of thing, where he never knew when the delivery was coming, which obviously it should be legal and is great. I wish there was more of that among today's pitchers.
Well, I'm glad we could touch on it. The minor leagues have been canceled for the year. How about that? My goodness.
Oh, that's just, you could see it coming. And, for this year, everything is kind of out the window. I mean, if there aren't any fans in big league stadiums, and they're already talking about contracting the minor leagues, it's just kind of a given that there won't be, there won't be any fans in the minor league parks either. And that's the whole basis of their existence. That the owners of those teams are a little bit panicked right now, just praying that it comes back to normal next year. Because if they haven't looked into selling the team already, they will be. But mostly it's about the fans. Just even a place as close as Sacramento, I know some people up there they never really get down to the Bay Area. And when it comes to baseball, they don't have to. They've got Sacramento, and the A's have been there, the Giants have been there, affiliated teams, and you're looking at guys, Triple A guys, who are close to getting to the bigs. It's a wonderful setting, with all the funny little gimmicks and mascots and promotions, and it's real ball. It's good ball, and it's kind of takes you back to as far as you want to go. But then you think about a place like Iowa, where they're just the next major league ballpark. You need the Concorde to get there.
You need a satellite to get there. Yeah.
Yeah, and thanks to the idiot Major League territorial TV things, there's a lot of teams that they're blacked out. I never understood that. They're blacked out of, like, the 6 nearest teams to them watching on TV. So you talk about depending on the minor leagues, in Des Moines and all over Iowa. I mean, please, if people are dying, emotionally over that they don't have a baseball summer. Especially because it's this summer in the pandemic, and the only way you get out of that, you rationalize that, is that, well, we wouldn't be at the parks anyway because of the damn thing. But you just worried that maybe your team, which you can't see, is never going to come back, and that's the biggest bummer for people all over the country.
Absolutely, you never know what's going to happen next year, and you're right. Yeah. There are thin margins here, and a lot of teams are going to go bankrupt or be sold or who knows what. Hey, John Miller was on this week, and Darren Chan, the engineer producer of Giants Broadcast, was on the radio as well, talking about fan noise. And I guess they're going to experiment and see, what sort of background noise they can do. But Darren brought up a great point, and you may need about 200 different areas of fan noise. We got knocked down. You need the the walk-off home run, the big hit, the anticipation. It's going to be quite a production.
And you can't do that. You know, you can't have that. I mean, Darren Chan, he's one of the best. I wouldn't expect anything from him. But somewhere, a guy's going to get knocked down at a time when everybody should be silent, and the guy's going to hit the button where everybody's cheering, you know, and laughing. It's just you can't do this. It's not a TV show. It's not a laugh track.
Okay.
I've been watching a lot of international soccer where they have sort of a constant hum. And I hate anything that's fake, but I kind of got used to it because it wasn't intrusive and they didn't try to turn it up. I think at first they tried to turn it up like, oh, we could have a goal here and it gets louder and that's kind of stuff. That's all bull for me. I mean, but to have just a crowd, a basic crowd noise, the kind of thing, if you turn on your radio and nobody's saying anything and you hear that sound, nobody even has to say anything. It's just comforting to hear the sound of a crowd at a baseball game when nothing is particularly happening. There's a hum to it, it's a distinctive sound. And if they pipe that in, I don't think that would be too terrible. But, you know, to try and orchestrate the sound over every little thing, you know, good luck. That's a joke.
Yeah, and it's going to be hard to do. I mean, because everything's spontaneous. So, you know, John will be talking about it, and then the crowd will come in like 4 seconds later. You know,
You
can't do that.
No.
I'm a big proponent of summertime baseball, and Bruce, I'll tell you this, and I just love it. Doubleheaders. I just think we've lost something without having a Sunday doubleheader, and I realize the money, the players, the union, the TV, the double admissions, and all the crazy arguments you want to make. There was something that baseball needs to reconnect with society. And it's going to that Sunday doubleheader and making a day out of it. And the standings change. You get 12 at-bats for a hitter. And Monday you'd look to see who's now leading the league. Their baseball is missing the boat on not having doubleheaders. I really, really believe that.
Oh, yeah, I agree. You know, we both come from days when we cherished the idea of going out to doubleheader. And the whole thing about it was that it was a couple of two-and-a-half-hour games. You know, you're looking at 5 hours of game time and a half hour between them, and you can definitely hang with that. I mean, single games last that now. The whole key to having doubleheaders, aside from getting it past the players' union and the owners, would be to get games back to a normal length. And the only way you do that is to, you know, cut down the replay process and enforce the rules that are in place. And, you know, stay in the damn box and get pitch, throw the ball, for heaven's sake, and maybe cut down the TV time commercials in between. Those kinds of things could make a huge difference. You know, everything they've tried now, all this stuff that they're experimenting with, the DH and the extra innings with a guy on second, that has nothing to do with the pace of the game. You need a 2.5 hour game, you'd expect that, and you could go to the park for that. For 2, 3 hour and 50 minute games, I don't think so.
No, it would be like the Mets and Giants in 1964.
Yeah. It's like there's another game here.
23 innings, you know, 7 hours. All right, there was just some beauty that was part of it that I miss. I really do. One last thing for you before we go. We got so many things we'll talk more about in next week. We'll be back on our nighttime slot next week. But today is the anniversary of the Lou Gehrig speech, and I was trying to think. Maybe the most famous baseball speech ever, maybe Ted Williams Hall of Fame speech, but anything top Lou Gehrig and what he said on July 4th, I think it was 1939?
I think at the ballpark, I'm really hard-pressed to think of anything. I mean, I was able to go to a couple of old-timers games at Yankee Stadium, and it was great to see some of those guys take the mic for a little bit. I was at Cal Ripken's game where he broke Gehrig's record for consecutive games, one of the greatest nights in the history of the game, and his words were great, but Gehrig's words were tied into a disease that was going to do him in, and all the Yankees are around there, and nobody knew exactly what he was going to say, and nothing comes to mind in terms of actual speeches at the ballpark. That was that lives on, and it's especially poignant for me because my father died of Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, and so I was kind of attuned to all that then, but and now, but yeah, I think that's kind of stands alone, at least for me.
Yeah, he said he was the luckiest guy, as Leonard Coppett said to me, the luckiest guy on the face of the earth. And, you know, and I've done shows. Brooke Shields, she recreated the speech. She was at the ballpark. And I said, Brooke, have you ever listened to it? And I don't think she had, because I said he says earth. Because
yeah, he's from New York.
He's from
Columbia.
New York. And it's just part of the speech I like to hear that.
Well,
enjoy the fourth. I mean, we've got baseball coming up, and let's see. What do you think of Samardzija's comments yesterday? That yes, there will be fans because the owners could care less. They'll force the fans, they'll force them into the ballpark.
Well, it speaks to the mentality of ownership in sports all across the world. They're losing their TV money. They're forcing it to get back. They might pull it off. They might not. German soccer pulled it off. We're far from that here. It's a land of idiots, for God's sake. But I love that he said that, because that's exactly the kind of mentality we're looking at. And I'm positive that when fans are invited back in this sport and many others, it'll be the wrong move.
Well, we'll see. A lot of things can happen in the next few weeks. Let's all hope it's good. Bruce, have a great fourth, and I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Marty. Thanks a million.
All right. That is Bruce Jenkins. More coming up. Always great baseball discussion. More coming up. KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.